Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Tall Paul, and I have my good friend here, Sherry Minnelli. She is a permaculture enthusiast in our local community, and she is very involved with all of our local events.
I am trying here.
Just listen to me through Skype.
I'm trying to do that. Let's see if I can find out what's causing this.
That's fun.
Okay.
All right. Welcome, Sherry. How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. I've got so many ideas I want to share.
Yeah, Sherry goes to all of our events at Tipiwana Farm and all the other events in the community, and she's so well-read and, you know, very involved with her homeowners association, which I think is, I mean, that alone is an incredible specialty that we need, because there's so many. I've lived in homeowners associations, and they're very picky, and they have like one person in charge of all the landscaping, but they're very, seem, when I, where I live, very close-minded and wouldn't even listen to anything. And it was funny because the only garden that had anything, like hers was perfect and everyone else's was ridiculous.
I'm hearing an echo. I don't know if you're hearing it. I'm trying to find out where that's coming from.
Yeah, I don't know, because that's very old talking. Let's just ignore it. And
very involved with her homeowners association, which I think.
Well, that's interesting. So there's
alone is an incredible specialty.
I guess 483, and maybe I've never heard this before, but I mean.
And they're very picky, and they have like one person in charge of all the land.
I think that's coming from someone on the chat room.
Okay.
Well, whatever happened, that just helped.
Okay, great.
So tell us, today's topic is permaculture dreams, and we've had this topic before with Joey D'Elia. And I wanted Sherry to come and talk to us about permaculture dreams, because every time I talk to Sherry, she's like, have you heard about this? Have you heard about that? And she has such great ideas, and she's so well-informed. Not only that, she's a certified clinical hypnotherapist and has done a lot of stuff with, you know, motivating people and helping people to change and help form their mindset in a more positive way. And one of her specialties is natural childbirth. And I'm also a clinical hypnotherapist. And, you know, when you talk about hypnosis, we have what's called the critical factor. So in your mind, something will be said to you and you either accept it or you reject the idea. And so if I'm wearing a red shirt and someone says, oh, look at that purple shirt, it won't register, because the purple, it's not purple, it's red. And but in hypnosis, we relax the mind and we let that critical factor disappear, and you begin to spark the imagination, and emotions start to come up, and you have feelings, and anything that's suggested to you can come in. And we can accept these as, you know, beautiful, peaceful thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. So when we talk about these permaculture dreams, I'd love for Sherry to share some of these concepts that she has. And hopefully we can all listen to that and really start to spark our own imaginations and believe, you know, think about what is it, what's the perfect world we want? What's it going to be like to, you know, eat healthy and to, you know, have these vibrantly alive foods available to us at all times. And how do we go about that? Now, we can't all do it. Like, we all have a different role in this permaculture realm. We're all leaders. That's what I say. And I think one of Sherry's greatest virtues is this ability to dream and dream big and help inspire people. So anyway, Sherry, what do you think about all that?
Well, you reminded me of something that happened back when I used to teach the hypnosis for childbirth that I think comes into play really well here. I was trying this experiment, and it blew my mind. You know, I would think that with all the experience I had with working with the mind, that nothing could surprise or shock or awe me, but it still does. And one of the things I tried with my clients is I would say, you know, just tell me about your ideal birth. Let's just pretend that we could design the birth if it's for your highest good. And, you know, what time would you want to, where would you want to have this baby? At home? You know, this birth center, this hospital? Where would you want to be? And they would tell me, and we would, I would say, well, which doctor or midwife would you want to have there? You know, which family members? What time of day? You know, where, if you've got other children, you know, at what time would you start feeling labor? What would you do at home? You know, would you watch TV? Would you do this or that? When would somebody take your child if you're going to the hospital, and who would take them? And so we went through, like, their ideal birth. And I said, well, I want you to not worry about whether or not this is going to happen. We'll just, it'll just be fun to see. But let's just put it in your mind that, and I would put them in the hypnosis. They would put themselves in hypnosis. I would guide them. And I would go through the whole scenario a few times. And I would give them a tape afterwards. And about 50% of the time, it would happen exactly like we had written out and talked about. And it would shock the heck out of me that, you know, we could tell the body that it was going to be in labor for 3 hours, and the first hour and a half in labor was going to be very gentle, and then when they go to the hospital, they started dilating, and when they got to the hospital, they were 6 centimeters, and then within 45 minutes, they were giving birth. And, you know, some of the things that happen, I still just to this day have a hard time believing. I'm just so inspired and in awe. So if we take that same kind of concept and you put it towards permaculture and you go, well, if I could be a leader, or if I could make a change, or if I could inspire others, what would it be that I would do? And I think once you put that in your mind, you got that energy, and people see it, and they pick up on it subconsciously too, and they want to help you achieve your dreams. And, you know, especially when you're doing something that's so positive, and I see permaculture is so incredibly positive and inspiring, that everybody wants to jump on board and be part of the success of what you're dreaming.
Yeah, I mean, it's so neat. But the problem is, I think that we're taught as children, you know, because as children we have dreams. And you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I want to be an astronaut. And to the child, there's absolutely zero impossibility they're going to be an astronaut. But at some point we're told, oh, you can't do that. What are you, a dreamer? You got to go to work and get a job. And, you know, we stop, you know, believing, and we stop dreaming. And this is why it's so important. It's like, we must dream. We must create this world that we want. Otherwise, and I say this on practically every episode I have, if you want to go to Europe, you can't just go to Europe. There's a process to getting to Europe. You have to align yourself with that process in order to achieve the goals that you have for yourself. So to go to Europe, you have to have a passport.
I think we're pretty passive too, where we've been taught, probably because of the way we grow up in the school system, that we're always waiting for permission or waiting for somebody to tell us that something's okay to go do. And we don't always take ownership of it and think, you know, I'm planting this in my yard. Why don't I just put it out on Facebook? Hey, I'm planting beans and peas, and I'm doing this in my yard. If you want to learn gardening, come over at this time and this date, and we have a free gardening class. Or, you know, making up a little starter kit maybe with seedlings with some lettuces in it. And you know, just waiting until they're a little bit tall so that, you know, somebody can see what they are, bringing it over to a neighbor and say, I thought you'd like fresh lettuce. All you have to do is water it once a day or every few days when it starts getting dry, put it in your windowsill or put it outside and just pick the outer leaves, and you're going to have lettuce for months.
Right. I think, until you start it, I mean, you don't realize, because I didn't have any exposure to gardening as a child, especially vegetable gardening. And it wasn't until I was way an adult, you know, very old, because I'm so ancient, you know, that, you know, I find, I'm like, wait a minute, why aren't I doing this? So I did it, and it's not hard.
Well, and I don't know what, I had thought when I first moved to San Diego 20 years ago, oh, you can grow so many things, and I don't know why I never got started. And it was a few years ago when the GMOs, and, you know, then there was some talk that things that were supposed to be organic weren't. And I started really worrying about my kids more and more. And I started thinking, wait a minute, I live in one of the most perfect, and it doesn't even matter where you live, you can grow something everywhere. I live in one of the most perfect climates in the world. Why am I not growing any food? And so I started experimenting and, you know, realizing that I think the cool thing about permaculture is you realize that you don't need to go out and buy a whole bunch of stuff to have a good garden. You know, that there's so many things that you can do to really inexpensively start getting food immediately.
Well, I'm kind of smiling because you tell your story of how you raid all of your neighbors' garden clippings and stuff.
Oh, yes, I do that. And you know, well, the first thing was I wanted to find people that had food, that had too much food, like fruit trees, that, you know, they were just letting them all drop. And I started finding more and more people that would let me go pick or would give me a whole bunch of extra. And then I would go and I call it reverse trick-or-treating. Somebody gave me a huge bag of persimmons, like 60 persimmons, and it was way more than I could eat. And I guess I didn't think about canning them last year, but I decided to start knocking on doors, and I was explaining how you eat them and what they taste like. And I'd give each neighbor two or three of them. And I made a lot of friends that way. And yeah, I do like getting clippings from people if they've got, you know, one of my neighbors gave me she had a mini a tree growing. It was a loquat, and she had all of these geraniums, and so she gave me that. I was just so delighted to have another tree in my yard. And so.
That's great. Well, and you mentioned this picking of fruit that's not going to be used. We call that gleaning, and I totally think, I mean, that is something that I am so interested in because, like, where we live, there are, I mean, thousands of trees out there that you just, if you have a family, there's no way you could eat all the fruit on one tree. You have to share it, I mean, or let it go to waste. So one of my dreams is to kind of map out, you know, where are these trees and approach the people and ask them if, you know, we have people that could, you know, glean them or pick them for them. We'll give them some of the food if they want it and then give the rest to the food bank.
I just love that idea.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the ideas I know we talked about a long time ago, I'm working on doing the food forest in my backyard. I've got this huge hill. It's like 80 by 60 feet. And at the very top of the hill, it hits a street above with a sidewalk. It's a pretty main street in our subdivision. And my goal is to put up a whole bunch of fruit trees at the edge of that top of that hill and put a sign that says, please pick, you know, something about being respectful and not picking more than you personally want or can give to friends. But I thought that if I started creating that community there, that maybe other people would do the same, and how fantastic it would be to have neighbors that were all deciding to do different fruits and varieties so that we could all share and trade and
yes.
You know, that it would be a walk where you'd go down the street with your kids. I mean, how much fun would it be to come down the street with, like, your kindergartners or first or second graders and go, let's take a walk. We're going to go pick fruit. And the kids go nuts over that.
Absolutely. And that's a good point, is that not everyone needs an orange tree. An orange tree will produce, you know, thousands of oranges. So if you could plan it out, this is where the community planning comes in your permaculture. It's a design science. So you look at, you take an inventory. What do we have? And then say, what do we need? So if one person has an orange tree, someone else, you know, say, well, we don't have a peach, we don't have a plum, we don't have an apple. Let's plan this out. And I remember when I was in college, I studied down in Mexico in Guadalajara. And on the streets, they had fruit trees just open to the public. And, you know, it's we don't have that mindset. And someone said to me at my house where I lived in Oceanside, and they're like, Paul, aren't you afraid people are going to take your fruit in your front yard? And I'm like, well, I hope they do if they need it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if they need the food, yes, take
well,
it.
Well, there's nothing like the joy of giving away food. Like, I had so many cucumbers this year, and I was having a problem with my fridge, so they were getting really weird and soggy, and so I kind of had to give them away anyway. And I think I gave them away to 20 friends, 20 neighbors on the street, even some neighbors that I didn't really know, but I made such good friends with because I'm giving away, you know, food, and they love this sweet, delicious cucumber that's a variety they've never seen before. They can't get anywhere, and it's totally fresh and nutritious. And then I was giving it away at work to people there, and I have made so many friends just by giving away fruits and vegetables.
And I think it helps to inspire people, you know, like, because I, my specialty were the darn tomatoes. I have so many tomatoes.
I love tomatoes.
And, but I would go to like a family event and I'd have two cases of tomatoes. They're like, where did you buy those? I'm like, buy? I grew them, you know, and it's like, they're like, wow, like, you can grow those? You know, it's, and so I just think it's so important to share, and that's one of the permaculture ethics. So the first one is care of the earth, second is care of people, and the third is return of the surplus. There's plenty of abundance out there, and it's there for all of us to share. And if we hoard, if we're greedy and only want to keep it for ourselves, I just think it really isolates you. And I've had the same experience as you. As you share, you bring more joy and you meet more people, and I don't know, you inspire people.
Oh, I've inspired so many people because I had so many herbs growing, and at first we were having problems getting basil working. Oops, I have this. We're getting an echo again. I don't know if it's somebody listening on the chat room.
Well, let's just ignore it.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I started bringing herbs over to friends' houses at Thanksgiving, and we calculated they saved $16 just in the herbs that I brought over. And I said, why don't you plant some of these? They grow by themselves. You don't have to really even take care of some of these herbs. And they said, well, I don't know how to plant it. And I said, okay, if you pay for the plant, I'll help you plant it with your kids, and you'll see how easy it is. And now they went out and they bought a few other herbs. They actually bought a bed, and they started planting tomatoes. They planted lettuce. And then I had three other neighbors that I inspired as well. And after I got them started initially, they actually went out and bought some of their own stuff and planted it on their own. So I feel like I've started something here.
And I hope you keep going because it's important. And I have a funny story about that too. Because one of my friends, his hobby is bicycling. And he literally spends thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on these bicycles and all the, you know, clothing and all this stuff. He'll spare no expense for his hobby of bicycling. And he bought 2 acres here nearby. And he knew I was into fruit trees and gardening and stuff. And he says, well, Paul, can you help me, you know, find a tree or two? And I'm like, a tree or two? You could put in hundreds of trees. But anyway, so he says, well, how much is it? And I'm like, well, you can get bare root tree for $19.99. You know, oh, that's so expensive. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, like, you spend thousands of dollars on your bicycling. He's like, well, I like that. Anyway, so we went to a local nursery that specialized in citrus, and so we walked around, and he picked out, I think, about 5 or 6 trees, because you could taste the, you know, the fruit. Anyway, next thing you know, like a week or two later, he says, oh, I went back and I bought about 30 trees. Because he realized how much fun it is, and then he brought his kids, and they ate the fruit, and you know, it's just, like, incredible. It's incredible. But you don't know until you try it.
Well, and, you know, I was thinking maybe we should jump off from here and talk about some of the many ideas that we've either seen other people implement or some of the ideas that we've had, because we're, between the two of us, we just generate ideas like crazy.
Sure.
But the idea of putting fruit at the top of my hill, you know, part of that came from a TED Talk. There's a really incredible TED Talk, this lady from England, I believe. And the whole town, just 2 or 3 people decided to get together and start growing food. And they're growing corn right in front of the police station. And they're growing everything. And it's become a vegetable tourism town where people take walks while looking at the vegetables and fruits. And they become really well known because of it. And I just think that is so fabulous. I want to start seeing, you know, us and, you know, everywhere doing that where we, maybe we're not, I know that, you know, in the past, counties and cities have been skeptical or scared about planting trees in an open area where somebody might be able to eat a peach or a nectarine or an apple or whatever. But I think now that there's more food forests starting up in Washington State, I think there's one in Irvine somewhere, or in LA County. And so I think people are getting less and less afraid of that. And I'm hoping that we can convince more and more counties to, by the parks, do a little food forest.
Absolutely. In fact, I just had my third meeting yesterday with the city of San Marcos, and they are very future thinking. They've invited our local permaculture group called Permaculture San Marcos to meet with them, and they have all these different properties, and they basically have given us free rein, or not free rein, but they're like, you know, we have these properties, what would you like to do with them? And so we went yesterday and met with one of the directors. He showed us the site, and it was, Joey and I looked at it, we're like, oh my gosh, this is perfect permaculture site, because at the top of the land, they had two water drains that came in from two different directions. So it took the water from the hill and back and funneled it right into where the top of the land, so we could put in swales and food forests and all this stuff. And so if our city can do this, other cities can do this. And it's just a matter of partnering with them, asking, getting involved, networking, and it's exciting. I mean, I think it's time. They're ready to look at this. And the other thing that we talked a lot about was what we're calling water harvesting, but being water neutral. So we're talking about being carbon neutral. So if they're taking water out of a well to water grass, okay, they need to start looking at when you're harvesting water. So if we're taking water out of the aquifer, this much, you know, many thousands or millions of gallons, how many gallons can we harvest? And we're teaching them about that. And that's very exciting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
I think more people need to think about that, especially, you know, as different parts of the country experiences drought. If a really inspiring book I read recently was Brad Lancaster's book on water harvesting. It's amazing what he does in Tucson, Arizona. Yeah.
Absolutely, and he has YouTube videos as well, and you should look into those for sure.
So another project that I'm doing is I got involved in the school garden. We're one of the few schools in our school district that did not have a garden. We were on reclaimed water, so of course, you know, we were not allowed to grow fruits or vegetables because the school district, rightfully so, didn't want that contamination and the kids getting sick or injured from that. So we finally were able to get a $5,000 grant from our local PTO, and we put in the water we needed, and we're getting some incredible people from the community helping us to put in the irrigation, and we're going to be putting in fruit trees and little boxes for the kids to experiment, and then other places we'll be growing passion fruit vines and kiwi vines. And one of the things that I'm most excited about is teaching gardening in a way that's never probably been – well, it's not usually taught at the school gardens, where I want to teach the kids that, you know, instead of bringing in all of these inputs, these fertilizers and everything that they need to get things growing properly, instead, you know, if you take a look at these other plants, and especially I love Gaia's Garden. I love Toby Hemingway's book. It was such an eye-opener to me. That if you bring in comfrey, you're bringing in calcium. It's a nutrient accumulator. You're bringing in calcium. You're bringing in iron. And just a host of other nutrients. If you bring in strawberries, even those have, I believe, iron, or there was something surprising to me there. Dill, if you do a polyculture and you do beans, those are the nitrogen fixers. There's so many things you can do to help protect those plants so that they work together. The roots talk to each other so that they get enough water, that they shade each other when they need it, so that the soil doesn't get dried out, so that the soil life is perfect under there. It's getting all the nutrients they need. And that's the kind of thing I'm so excited about teaching these kids, because even their parents don't realize it. And nobody, I think that for too long we've forgotten about how important diversity is in seeds. You know, we go to the store and we buy the same old seeds that are sold to millions of people. And if you take a look at Seed Savers or rareseeds.com, you can find some fantastic heirlooms so that we don't lose all these varieties. And some of the tastes that you can get out of like these varieties of cucumbers, like, for example, that I grow, or I mean, every vegetable and fruit pretty much has an heirloom variety that you can get. So that's what I'm really, really excited about right now.
Well, and the kids, I mean, that's one of the main reasons I got involved, because as a kid, I didn't have exposure, and I'm upset, you know, and I look at our young children, and they need to know this stuff. And now that you mentioned, someone gave me a flyer, and I'm going to mention this Saturday, September 21st, at the Carlsbad Dove Library, there's going to be a garden leader training. It's a training workshop for parents, teachers, teens, and anyone interested in gardening with kids. It's a $5 material fee. It's a donation. And they give you a kit, and it's got materials to teach kids how to garden. And they're looking for people to go if you're in the area. So, again, that's 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Carlsbad Dove Library on September 21st, Saturday. And the website is kidsgrowingstrong.org.
I'm so there.
Yeah.
That couldn't be better timing.
Well, I'll see you there.
All right.
I think I'm going to be able to go. So, yeah, I mean, the kids, please, everyone, we have to help the children, please.
Well, it's amazing how excited they are. I really only had exposure for a few years when I was like 6 years old to a garden. And I'd wanted to garden for so many years, and I don't know what took me so long. I used to kill everything. I've killed geraniums. I've killed everything that you're not supposed to be able to kill. And so when people come up to me now and they're like, well, I can't garden because I got a black thumb. And I'm like, yeah, well, so do I, but I just keep learning. And I might have to plant something once, twice, three times, but eventually I figure it out and it grows. So just ask for help. Just because you have a black thumb, that doesn't mean that you have to not garden.
And one interesting thing is people overwater.
Oh, I was the underwater where I not water.
Yeah, like for my trees, I think I was overwatering because citrus in particular and avocados do not like what's called wet feet.
Yeah.
So the one tree was kind of yellowing. I'm like, oh. So I read what might have an iron deficiency. But ultimately what it was is I was watering too much. So there, you can totally cut back, you know, if we think – you know, like a lot of that, just get rid of your lawn. If you want a very interesting YouTube channel, go to Growing Your Greens.
Or I love John Kohler.
Yeah, growingyourgreens.com. John has a channel. If you start from the beginning, you'll see how he, you know, takes, goes around all over the country. Now, he happens to have a job where he can travel a lot. But he goes to all these community gardens, and it's very inspiring. And he's really hyper and enthusiastic. So
actually, I think he's the one that got me into it. A friend
yeah.
of mine told me, and that's what got me into doing all this. I took out my lawn, I think last year, my backyard.
Yeah, me too.
And I'd like to take out my front yard. I just need a nice plan and more time because I've got a lot to do in the backyard still. My dream for the backyard is I would like to become a permaculture urban site where I'd give tours and show people what's possible in the urban area.
Absolutely. And you can absolutely do that. And you will do that, Sherry.
Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen in the next year.
Yeah. Sherry and I are part of that Permaculture San Marcos group that I mentioned. And part of what we do as a group is we have what are called permablitzes. So we're project they want to do, they say, hey, if anyone's interested, I'm going to be putting in a raised bed, or I want to plant some trees. And so people will just come and help. And that's the one thing about permaculture in the community that is so amazing to me, is that what's great is, like, there's no religion involved, no politics involved. It's just about growing food, and people are so generous with their time, and they will come and help without any strings attached.
I think that amazed my husband at first, because he's like, what do you mean there's going to be like 30 people out here when you've got the trees to do? Why would they come? And I'm like, because you learn so much, you get new friends, you share. Sometimes people bring seeds or fruits. It's so much fun. And especially when you're starting out, I remember a year ago, I just couldn't wait until there was something going on. And I'm like, wow, I get to go for free and help and learn this, and which I guess is kind of funny if you think about it. Here I'm bringing my labor, but it really works out well. And so if you do not have a gardening club in your area, get on meetup.com, and you don't have to call it permaculture. Start as a gardening club so that you can – most people don't really – I think a lot of people still don't know the term permaculture. And,
right.
You know, I think by having a gardening club, people know what gardening is, so they'll get involved, and there's so much permaculture can offer them as far as helping them with their garden.
Yeah, if you don't have friends and you're lonely or whatever, like I always had plenty of friends and I had a great life, but I had this interest in gardening. And at one point I heard the term permaculture, and it was on meetup.com that they suggested, you know, here's a new group in your area. And I'm like, oh, you know, that's two cities away. I don't think I'm going to go to that. I mean, but I'm like, but that word permaculture, because I wanted to learn more about it. And I said, well, I'll try it out. And I went, and guess who's there the first night? Joey. Okay, well, Joey is dynamic and interesting and fun, and I was hooked, you know. So, and here I am, you know, talking about permaculture on the radio and, you know, living on a permaculture demonstration site, and that's how I met Sherry. And anyway, it's all good, and just get involved. And if you don't have one in your area, start one. Come on.
Well, I really wish I would have known about the meetup. What happened to me is I decided I was going to take out my backyard after listening to John Kohler on Growing Your Greens. And I was going to, you know, I wanted all this food. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to see if I can find free mulch. So I contacted a company that to see if they would bring me some free mulch from the tree clippings. And I said, you know, yeah, I need a whole bunch because I'm going to get rid of my lawn and I'm doing permaculture. And he happened to know Joey, and he hooked me up with Joey, and that's how I met everybody. And I really wish I had known beforehand, because it would have really helped me to be in a group and meet other people that, you know, were into this.
And you go to one event, and then you're like, oh, that was fun. I'll go to the next event. So you go to the next event, and you see some of the same people, and then you see new people, and then you keep going. In our area, we have, like, you know, permaculture groups. We have sprouting, all these different topics, different groups, but the same people keep going, and it's this community that's building, and I don't know. I'm all for it. So what's the next neat thing that you have on your list there?
What was it? You know, I started seeing some Pinterest pictures that really inspired me. I'm seeing things like growing vertical gardens in your kitchen so that you have all your herbs and lettuce. And I think that is so fabulous. I could see it 5-10 years from now, that being the new trend where our architects are building new homes and that's being built into the homes.
Absolutely.
Because we see the organic movement going really, really increasing. It's a really strong movement right now, people wanting to have fresh, more local and organic, and having more control over their food. So I definitely see that as a big trend that's coming. That you'll start seeing that.
Yeah, I hope so. And if you haven't seen it, yeah, there's these vertical gardens. Just Google that, and they're really beautiful and convenient because you're literally you can grow the herbs right in your kitchen.
Yeah. So even if you have a really small yard, it's amazing how much space you can save by just having a vertical garden. In fact, you know, one of my neighbors that really inspired me. She's from Greece. She has the Garden of Eden, I swear, in her backyard. She's got, I want to say, over 19 fruit trees, but her yard is so tiny compared to our yard. She has about 5 feet on throughout the back of her yard on every side, and she's got 19.
Oh my gosh!
Trees, and they're dwarf. And so when I meet people that have small yards, they think they can't have a tree because they think they need 30 square feet, you know, per tree or something. But you really can do so much with these small dwarf trees now.
Absolutely. And there's techniques like espalier, which is to grow fruit on a fence. So instead of a three-dimensional round tree, you just grow it like two-dimensionally, I guess you'd say. I don't know. But on the fence, and you don't have to take up all that space. And you can also like put 4 apple trees in one hole. People don't know that because when you think of an orchard, you think of long rows of trees and huge spaces between. But we don't realize that the reason the spaces are there, it's not for the trees. It's for the big trucks that come in on commercial operations so that it can harvest the fruit and put it right onto the truck. But the trees themselves can be planted close to each other and kept small so that they don't, you know, you just keep it in picking height. You don't need huge, huge trees.
Well, and I've also heard, and I got a feeling this will be a trend as well, I think that some entrepreneur could do really well by doing a nursery that caters a little bit more to permaculture. You know, as I understand it, you can, these apple trees can be in the forms of bushes, and that, you know, having the long trunks, you don't necessarily need, in fact, keeping them short, you keep the squirrels out, the birds out, because they don't want to be so close to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can have a little bush of apples right there in your yard if you want.
Absolutely. And I planted in my front yard. I just have a standard small front yard in a standard, you know, house. And I have over 16 varieties of fruit. But the apples, like I have 5 different varieties of apples right there in the front. And they're on this espalier, which is a French word, which means, I think, grow on a fence or something. And within, you put it in the ground. I think the very first year I had apples, but, you know, certainly by the second year, I mean, just loads and loads and loads of apples. So you're not sacrificing, you know, the amount of fruit. You're going to get plenty of fruit for your family. And one idea, in case you don't know, is you can buy varieties that fruit at different times. So one would come in June, another in July, August. You know, you spread it out. So that's a question you would want to ask your local nursery.
I read an article that truly inspired me. It was a California Rare Fruit Grower Society member, and I think he had the smallest backyard. He had like a 20 by 30 foot backyard or something just ridiculously small. But he had 535 varieties of fruit in his backyard, and what he did is he would take a tree and he would graft sometimes even 100 varieties on a tree. And his goal was to be able to go out any day of the year and pick a piece of fruit. Because you know how, you know, sometimes you have a peach tree and everything ripens at the same exact moment, or you have an orange tree. And so he wanted to, by grafting different varieties on those trees, have, you know, so many more choices. And I just think that's so interesting and so fascinating.
Yes. And there are groups, clubs like this California Rare Fruit Growers Association, which I'm a member of. And in this winter months, they have a scion exchange, which is this wood from your trees, and they exchange it. So, you know, you might have an Alberta peach and someone else has a Saturn peach. And you can take that wood from what your tree, and then they can put it on your friend's tree and vice versa. And now, because the peach tree already has the roots and everything, you just put this little graft on and now you have multiple. And apples in particular, I guess they call them like Franken trees or something, where you can have all these varieties of fruit on one. So that is awesome. So what else, Sherry?
Well, I know we saw an article the other day, and now I'm forgetting part of it, but the guy that was the CEO of Aptera, he started a thing where he realized that people should be growing more things in their house, and he's experimenting with LEDs. And I want to say it's almost like a fridge or an appliance that's full of LEDs that grows
lettuce. It was an outdoor device, but I said, would it be neat? I could see this device in the future being put into homes right next to the refrigerator.
I so see that, Paul.
Yes.
In fact, I see that. And one of the ideas last week, my husband and I went to the grocery store, and I love the farmers markets. And in the last year, I've really realized how important it is to go local. So I'm doing everything I can going local to the farmers and the farmers markets first before I buy anything else at the regular stores. And I started thinking when I was in the regular stores, wow, I was at Stater Brothers. I'm like, you know, I really wish that they would get some local farmers in here and have a display that says, hey, local San Marcos, California farmer, you know, oranges from this farm, and talk a little bit about that particular farmer. And then I started thinking, well, you know, it'd be even more interesting. What if we had a food forest store where the outside of the store they were growing some of the trees so that you could go to each of the areas of the trees, and if they were ready, you could pick them. And if they were too tall, you might have a box in front of it where the employees have already gone up on ladders and picked them. And you could pick your own herbs. You could go to an area that either would have a greenhouse or it would be outside and pick your own lettuce. And I thought, how fabulous would that be? I know I would go there because then I know I'm getting fresh food. And what about instead of the fish that they usually have at the market? I've been hearing more and more things that are a little alarming to me about buying some of the store-bought fish. You know, what if they did the tilapia or the perch or something and had that water, you know, do the aquaponics so that it feeds, you know, the water to the watercress and the lettuces and all of that, so that you've got the healthy fish that you can get totally fresh and totally alive. And then you've also got the greens right there. So I really think that that's where we're going to end up. I think that we're seeing people getting more and more concerned about their food supply, about GMOs. They're getting concerned about what's organic and what's not, and they want to know who's producing their food, and they want to help, you know, doing more local. The more local you go, the more sustainable you are because you don't have as many of the costs. And so I see that store, and then I see a store also expanding and helping people grow their own food. So they might sell a refrigerator size LED thing so that you could grow the lettuces inside your house, especially if the climate isn't ideal for growing outside part of the year. And, you know, having the soils and the compost and the seeds there. And I really think that that's where we're headed.
Yeah. And it's exciting. I can't wait. And I think just, you know, I'm not going to invent it. I'm not going to do it. But I think just talking about we're planting seeds here, and it might help you if you're an inventor or, you know,
entrepreneur.
If you're thinking about it, go for it, you know. And if you are an inventor, you are someone that is a forward thinker, get a hold of me. Send me an email at asktallpaul@gmail.com. I'd love to have you on the show and hear your ideas.
Well, and, you know, even entrepreneurs that have small stores, maybe you have just a small little grocery store, you know, start by adding a little vegetable patch outside or inside or on the roof. And I think that it would become a destination because it's such a new thing where people really do want fresh, but they just don't know how to get fresh.
Yep.
Let's see. There was another idea that just escaped me, but I'm sure it'll come back. Oh, greenhouses. You know, I thought of it'd be so much fun to come up with some kind of greenhouse kit for a community where you would train the people in the community how to take care of it and how to grow things. And instead of having a gas station every few miles, you could have a greenhouse, too, every few miles.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, all you need is a small piece of land, you know, 20 by 30, and you can just grow so much stuff.
That is so neat. Like a community greenhouse or something.
Exactly. And what if every subdivision had one or two?
Huh.
You know, so that you – and, you know, the other thing that I talked to my homeowners association about, and I think it's still in the works. I think they still have to work on the reclaimed water in our area. But I said, you know, we've got all these little tot lots, these parks for toddlers. You know, what if we had a garden so that there was a place to go pick blueberries and blackberries or raspberries, or pull a few carrots, or just have a few plots available so that the kids and the parents could be over there digging in the dirt together. They actually approved it and said that they would do something like that, and I haven't followed up in the last few months to see where we are on that. And the other thing to grow community is, you know, I noticed we've got a lot of trails, and I think that that's kind of a trendy thing in the last 15 years, at least here in Carlsbad, California, and San Marcos, California, and other places to have a little bit more open land. But I said, you know, what's missing is there's no place to sit. So I remember when I was pregnant or when I had my toddlers, and we'd go on these walks, but we'd get so tired and we just wanted to sit down. And I watched a really great video from Oregon. It was Portland. And they were talking about how they grew some of these communities. And one of the key elements is you have to have some place for people to sit.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, so like this greenhouse, you could, or like in my old Homeowners Association, we had a huge, I don't want to say field, I don't even know what it was, but some area. But I could see putting in like a nice gazebo or maybe even a grape trellis, you know, you could sit under it and, you know, have a nice picturesque place, but also have it functional for food and, you know, the community growing and things.
Yeah, I think it'll become more and more trendy. I think that food is going from, oh, we don't want to see it, that's not, you know, I think I was reading in Rosalind Creasy's book, Edible Landscapes, and it's one of my favorite books. It's so beautiful. The pictures are amazing. And she was talking about how it was a very English thing to hire people and have a perfectly manicured lawn with no food, and it was taboo to have food in there because it meant that you weren't as wealthy. And so I think we're going against that model because we're seeing, you know, grow food, not lawns, and we're seeing a lot of people finally being able to put food in their front yards. I think that trend is going to continue. And there's some really amazing things that you can do if you did want an edible landscape where you don't want people to even know that you've got fruit in your front yard. Pomegranates, those make great bushes. They're so pretty when the pomegranates ripen. And most people don't even realize that those are, you know, and you know, when you're driving by, they don't look at it and think, oh, you know, they're growing fruit or food right there.
Exactly. And isn't her book especially... That's kind of her specialty, is to hide the food.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's not necessarily that she's hiding the food, but she took it from being a landscaper and then took a look at how beautiful some of the vegetables were. Like eggplant is so gorgeous, and pepper plants, and there's so many beautiful fruits and vegetables out there that we don't see as ornamental.
Right, right.
But yeah, you look at her books and you don't even realize that there's fruit and vegetables, you know, right there.
Definitely, yeah.
Oh, so what? I know you've come up with so many ideas as well. What's one of yours?
Really?
I every time I talk to you, I feel like you're just right there with ideas.
I can't keep up with you, Sherry. I don't know. I mean, for me, it's not a matter of, you know, these big, incredible things. We don't have to have big, incredible ideas. Let's start with the simple ones, like go and buy some seeds.
How about this? As a birthday present or a Christmas present or whatever present you can think of to a friend, even a housewarming gift, how about just plant some seeds, get some lettuce started, and bring that over to somebody's house? Because I think once you've tasted fresh lettuce, you can't go back to buying the $4 bags of lettuce at the store.
Yeah. And like the first time I had broccoli or that I grew, I could not believe the taste difference. It was like so energetic and so fresh, and I'm like, it changed me. But yeah, that's a great idea. Give gifts of seeds, and if people are, you know, oh, thank you, but you see some hesitation, say, oh, I want to help you do it, you know, and then they can see, you know, help implant a little confidence, and, you know, they'll get started. And then, so that's the first year. Second year, you can start composting and, you know, you just start some adding things to the things that you can do.
Well, you know, maybe I should tell you, when I first met Joey and I started feeling so bad that here I am in a nice homeowners association with a nice home. It's 13 years old. And I felt so guilty that I wasn't doing more for the environment, and I wasn't doing gray water, and I wasn't doing this, and I wasn't doing that, and I'm not doing this. And Joey stopped me and he goes, you know, Sherry, you need to stop with that. You can't do all of this at one time anyway, but just growing lettuce, you will save so much in energy because of how much water and fertilizers and everything else they use just to get that to the store. Just start growing your own food, and just doing that alone is one of the most sustainable things you can do. And so I started taking his advice, and before I knew it, I realized that, you know, when I was cutting up vegetables or fruits, I started putting them in a bowl right in my kitchen and dumping it out, you know, into the compost pile or into the worm bin, or just digging it into a hole in the garden, and realizing that just that alone, and I couldn't believe I think I reduced the amount of garbage I was giving, throwing out on the curb by like one third or two thirds. And because I was growing things, I also wasn't getting as much plastic, and I didn't realize how much packaging and plastic came out of going to the store. And so then I started making other changes because of that. So when I was washing something that, you know, only had vegetables in it or something like that, I was saving the water. If I was rinsing out my my smoothie cup, I would rinse it out so that it was in a bowl so that I could feed that to the blueberries. And so now I'm saving a lot more water, and I'm a lot more conscious of it. And at first it was hard to get my kids and my husband involved, but now, you know, they'll peel a banana, it goes straight into the compost bowl on the counter.
Yeah, and that thing about the water I started to do as well. You know, as kids, I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandmother used to wash the dishes in this bucket, you know, like a, I don't know, big, huge Tupperware thing, and she would tote the water out to the garden, and we would say, what is this, Little House on the Prairie? We'd make fun of her, but really, she was doing gray water without knowing she was doing it, you know, and she was conserving water. And the other thing, she would, you know, put the wet waste, you know, like the peelings and stuff, in a bowl and keep it in the refrigerator. And then later, she didn't actually compost, but she was always worried about bugs and mice and things. But that's what I would do. I'd just keep a bowl, and if I wasn't ready to take it outside, I'd put it in the refrigerator so it didn't start to smell. And anyway, when I was ready, I'd go and take it out, because I'm one person, I don't have a lot of volume for this stuff. But absolutely, composting is wonderful. The other thing is vermicomposting, which are worms.
I have 4 worm bins right now, and I'm probably going to start a 5th or a 6th.
Yeah, worms are so much fun. They don't smell, and they have the best fertilizer you can have. They won't burn your plants, and I don't know. Do you think it's fun? I love
them. Oh, I love it. I was watching an expert on it, and I found out that they actually secrete a growth hormone. So they did experiments with, like, you know, 5% compost or worm castings, 10%, 15%, 20%, 30%. They found that there was a sweet spot. I think it was either, I want to say it was either 10% or 20%, because after that you actually got less producing because it was too much growth hormone. So I thought that was fascinating. I didn't really realize what they could do.
Yes. Another concept that Joey's really into is mulching.
Yes.
Oh, man. Anyway, he's an arborist. He has access to a lot of mulch. And people who are listening out there in the United States, they have access to a lot of mulch. But here in California, we have artificial landscapes, meaning they come in with these bulldozers and they completely remove all of our natural habitation. We don't have a lot of trees and stuff in the cities, so they bring in trees that aren't naturally here. So we don't have a lot of extra leaves and things. So, but anyway, Joey, there are sources for mulch, and he has 2.5 acres or so here and put down mulch everywhere because he had a source for it. Even if he didn't, especially in the places where he didn't know what he was going to do. And after, I don't even know, just a couple months, if you pull back the mulch, you can see the earthworms coming up. And this is a very damaged land. They had huge, it was a storage lot for big, like, bulldozers and things. So they had all this heavy equipment on the soil. And so he brought in this mulch, and now there's life. I mean, it's incredible how quickly. And it's another, mulch is a device to not only harvest water, but it prevent evaporation of water, which is a significant, important thing here in California because we're so short on water. And anyway, it helps to build the soil.
Yeah, I've noticed I started taking a lot of mulch from Joey. And it's amazing because I put some down, and I thought I put it down thick. And yeah. A month later or 3 months later, I'm looking at it, and it's like almost gone.
Yeah, where
did it go? But underneath, the soil is so beautiful. It smells so good.
Yes. So you keep adding and adding and just keep going for it. And ways you can do that is find, just go to the Yellow Pages, if that even exists anymore, and just find a local tree arborist. And because they, if they don't give it away, they have to take it to the dump and pay to get rid of this stuff. So they'd be more than happy to give you all their leftovers. You can go to Craigslist and put an ad out and say, you know, I'm looking for extra mulch, or just look for people who put an ad out who are the tree specialists, and then contact them to see if they're in your area. They probably won't go out of their way to deliver it to you, but if you're in your neighborhood and you see someone having tree work done, you can just go on over and say, hey, when you're done, can you dump that stuff here? They'd be more than happy to do it.
Yeah. I found another idea that I had talked to you about a few weeks ago. You know, for GMO foods and non-GMO foods, there's been a huge explosion of demand for non-GMO foods. And so one of the ideas I had was, you know, if we could have an organization, profitable or for nonprofit, whatever, who contacts every farmer in their area to find out if they're growing non-GMO organic, if they do, putting them on a list and matching them with companies who need it and are looking for it. And if they aren't, they could educate them as to how much more they can make and how many more buyers they can find if they switch over. So I think that's a good way of helping to, you know, get over this GMO hump that we've had.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it could be, somebody could make some good money out of it by, you know, being the go-between between the farmers and the people who need this product.
Yep. So get out there, everyone, and meet your local growers and, you know, network and create lists, make websites, do whatever you can to get the word out of who you should be supporting. Local community gardens and farmers markets, try to support those as much as you can. And talk to your local grocer and say, listen, you know, I know these different growers. Can we start carrying their oranges? Or, you know, how can we go about bringing in the local produce into the supermarket?
So yeah, I think I definitely haven't been able to get there yet. But as far as the managers, I was going to start talking to some of my local managers at Vons and Stater Brothers and Albertsons and saying, hey, why don't you just highlight some of the local, you know, farmers, and it would help the farmers and it would help the store. And I think then it makes people realize when they're shopping, they really do want to think about local.
Definitely. So thank you, Sherry. I wanted to talk about permaculture voices because we're talking about future thinking and dreaming. And so in March of 2014, there's going to be the Permaculture Voices Conference in Temecula, California. And the huge forward-thinking leaders in permaculture and, you know, this growing food and other systems like water harvesting and things, they're coming to California and you're invited. So if you want to learn, it doesn't matter if you're a beginner or a total expert, it's an incredible way to come and be motivated and to get inspiration and to learn so that you can go back into your communities. And, you know, a lot of people listening, you probably work for corporations. You know, if you work for a corporation, they have budgets, and you probably can go to a conference and you can choose whatever conference you want to go to. This applies to all kinds of things. So if you can go to permaculturevoices.com, look at the speakers, sign up, and we'll see you there. It's going to be great, and there's that. Anyway, if you could visit permaculturecentral.com, this is a website that I'm just starting. In fact, the existing site is going to be, I'm changing the platform, but I'm going to be building that, and I plan to, like, highlight, you know, be a central resource for all the permaculture websites and things, so that it's like a launching pad to get to the other places. And coming up, I have Joey tomorrow, And we're going to be talking about water harvesting at 7 p.m. Pacific time, or you can listen to the broadcast after, you know, the recorded show. Sherry, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And I'm glad to have you as a friend, and you're definitely inspiring. You keep us on our toes over here.
Well, one last idea, because you're talking about permaculture voices. If anybody has is living in an area, they could start a permaculture conference.
Absolutely. Yep. So, all right. Well, we'll see you next time. And everyone, get out there and just plant some seeds if you can. This is winter time in the northern hemisphere, so you can plant carrots, celery, onions, broccoli, cabbage, any of the what are called cold season vegetables. All right. Thanks.